Well, they got their start back before the big war. Good 10, 20 years. People started getting dissatisfied with the way society was going, so they dropped out. Actually, all kinds of folk were doing that. But a certain breed combined that dissatisfaction with wanderlust. They decided the way to stay beneath the system's scopes was to keep moving. So they hit the road and just kept rolling. Perpetual travelers was one thing they called themselves, or permanent tourists. But generally they came to call themselves tech nomads.
I guess I've got the nomad part nailed down.
They were passing now through fields of early spring wildflowers, vast patches of color, blue and white, although muted in the poor light filtering through the clouds. She wondered how the flowers survived the acid rains.
But I'm still not too clear on the tech.
Well, I've been told the one thing that served as a kind of bond for them was a fascination with technology. The latest and greatest. Not the big scale stuff. Really, gadgets, you'd call them. For a lot of them, it was a love-hate relationship with technology. They had a general distrust of it, but they loved those parts of it that made their lifestyle possible. Some of it was keeping in touch with one another. Stuff like satellite phones, the internet. They were among the first people outside government to use those things. Heck, some of them had been government techies before dropping out. And a big part of it was transportation. See, a lot of them disliked the internal combustion engine, the automobile. Even those who didn't had a tendency to try alternate modes of transport, just out of sheer cussedness or love of novelty, if nothing else. So they loved to experiment with wind power or muscle power HPVs, that's human-powered vehicles, alternate fuels. Actually, it made some sense, well, with oil prices going up and down so unpredictably, and the supplies always being vulnerable, they and the survivalist movement had a lot in common. A certain amount of plain old overlap.
A drop hit Christy on the cheek. It tingled. For a moment, she thought it was just the impact. But as it lingered on her skin, she began to feel a slight but distinct burn. She wiped it off convulsively.
Shit. Hey, Paul.
Right, I'm on it. Got a good 5-10 minutes before it gets serious. All it'll do till then is spit. That mostly water.
She gripped the handholds on either side of the seat until her knuckles threatened to burst through the skin and pedaled harder.
So anyway, a lot of them took off on their bikes or trikes or land yachts. Some took to sailing on boats. Some of them even took to the rails, like yours truly, the rail ghost. Not saying I was one of them. This was all way before my time, of course.
Paul?
It started to sprinkle. The rain wasn't painful, but as it lay on her skin, it gave her a prickly sensation, like the beginnings of a sunburn.
Then the big war hit. Technomads had a greater survival rate than the general run of the population. One, they were mostly dispersed out of the urban centers. Two, they tended to be into self-sufficiency. Things like carrying along stocks of water purifier tabs and non-perishable foods, even when they didn't know how to live off the land. And while many of them were loners and they were split into a whole bunch of groups and factions, they had a certain sense of kinship. They looked out for each other, helped when they could, still did a lot of dying just like everybody else. At least this is what I've been told.
It was raining quite briskly now. She only wished she'd trusted Paul's assurance they'd be out of it before it started to sluice the flesh from their bones.
It wasn't until after the sky dark that things got real bad for the technomads. See, lots of folks blamed everybody identified with technology, scientists, engineers, plain old techs, for the megacult. So they started to hunt them down and lynch them. Not everybody joined in, but plenty did. A lot of technomads died, and died hard. It was plenty ironic if you go in for that sort of thing. A lot of people who were anti-tech in most ways died for being tech lovers. The survivors drew in tight after that. No matter what they felt before, they dedicated themselves to preserving all the old tech lore they could, and even adding new. And they swore to keep themselves as far removed from the rest of the world, from the humans anyway, as possible. It started off as sheer survival, but after all these years, it's tradition.
Christy's hand burned. She saw the skin go red where a drop had hit.
Paul! We've got to do something, now!
Right.
He applied the brakes. She dropped her feet off the pedals, jumped off the platform, then ran alongside Paul as he slowed the yawl. She didn't know where else to go. Paul hopped off to the left.
Help me get her off the track.
Paul had a screwjack system he could use for getting the yawl on and off the rails with minimal exertion. No time for that now. They both grabbed handholds at either end of the platform and heaved it bodily up and off. Then Paul was trotting down the embankment, hauling on the yawl, and Christy was following, trying mainly to keep it from overrunning him. At the bottom, he turned and began pulling the craft into a yawning circular opening. A culvert. If she hadn't been riding backward, she'd have spotted it as well, she thought. As she ducked into shelter, she heard sizzling as reagents worked on her skin, smelled a burn stink from her hair, which was whipping in agitation. The corrugated metal passageway was big, enough to pass a wag. Stagnant water was pooled along the bottom. Paul set the brake on the yawl, then used his hat to scoop up water to rinse first Christy's skin and hair, then his own.
Whoa! Guess I cut her a little close there.
You might say that. But what if enough comes down to raise the water level?
I don't reckon we'll get that much downpour. If it does, we can move higher.
And if the culvert fills?
I got a few tricks up my sleeve, never you doubt. Old Chemstorms ain't made a real ghost of the real ghost yet.
Outside, the tainted rain was pelting down. Christy's nose wrinkled at the astringent smell, and she moved back from the mouth. They weren't the only creatures who had sensed the storm's onset and sought shelter, she saw. Dozens of frogs sat on the lower curve of the culvert or hopped around. Paul stalked one briefly and caught it up by the hips. He held it up toward Christy.
Hungry?
She shook her head. She wasn't famished enough yet to eat raw frog. She still had self-heats in her pack, and Paul had snared a rabbit the night before. For somebody who couldn't bring himself to fight, he was a pretty redoubtable hunter, a very small game anyway. But Paul was Paul, and the only terms he could be taken on were his own. It would do her no more good to bother herself about his inconsistencies or even his cowardice than about his biting the head off the frog and munching contentedly away.
Are you a technomad, Paul?
Me?
He took another bite of frog.
Told ya. I'm a solitary. A perpetual floating hermit. Even though I decided to take a little sabbatical from hermitdom, take me on a traveling companion. Mighty comely one, too.
But you have some means of communicating with them.
but you're a sly one, aren't you? Just been waiting to pop that one on me, all the way from Tucumcari.
The arrival of Brianna the Ice Bitch and her pals was a little timely, you have to admit. Then there was the fact you said, what took you so long, or words to that effect.
Shoot. Here I was hoping you'd pass that off as ironic repartee. Alrighty then. I knew they were in town. I saw the signs they left.
Signs?
Hobo sign. Some of them fellas were the first technomads in ways, long time back before the nuke, although they didn't have that much to do with the technology. Mostly just used it in furtherance of their nomadic ways. Rail riders like me, with real trains to ride on. Oh well, to a mundane, that's to a normal person, their marks just look like graffiti or even random scratches. But if you know the code, amazing what you can learn.
You sure you don't have some other means to get in touch with them? You didn't exactly seem to be surprised to find them in Tucumcari, even when you were looking at that wall.
He was down to just the little froggy drumsticks now. He took a last bite, chomping them off at the knees. He threw away the flippered feet.
I hate that part. Too much like eating a miniature scuba diver.
Well?
You gotta allow rail ghost a few mysteries, Missy. Let's just leave it at that.
She glared at him. He gave her a placatory smile, then hunkered down to rest his butt on the curving tin wall of the culvert. After a moment, Christy made herself ease up. She was still dependent on him. She had no practical pressure she could apply. If she applied threats or actual physical force, he might tell her what she wanted to know. He also might not. He had an awful lot of fortitude for a self-proclaimed coward, even without any stomach for fighting. But he would almost certainly look to escape her after that, and might well be willing to lead her into a trap to do so. He knew this environment, this odd in-between world of the rails. She didn't. She went and stood in the mouth of the culvert, staring out into the chemstorm. Black despair seemed to open like an abyss inside her.
Don't worry, Missy. We'll catch that old train. You'll see.